This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, June 10th, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poetry ripped from the headlines.
6:30 a.m. Eastern Time this morning, an explosion in a mine in West Virginia.
13 miners trapped by an explosion this morning.
There was an explosion at a coal mine in West Virginia.
In January of 2006, a coal mine exploded in Sago, West Virginia. The disaster was all over TV news for 2 days as rescuers desperately tried to reach the 13 miners.
Breaking news tonight, 12 of the trapped West Virginia miners are alive.
They're screaming, they're all alive.
They announced it at the church that they're all alive.
The news reports turned out to be wrong.
13 men fell trapped in a mine in West Virginia. Only one made it out alive. But their love lives on.
The Sago Mine disaster has since been memorialized in song, a lot of songs, and more recently in a book-length poem by the documentary poet Mark Nowak. The poem is called Coal Mountain Elementary, and this past winter it was given a dramatic reading by actors from Davis and Elkins College in Coal Country, West Virginia.
Well, he looked at me at George and he said, "That felt like an explosion." That's exactly what he said.
Justin Hopper saw the performance, and he wrote about it for an article up on our website called From Sago to Xinjiang, Mark Nowak's Documentary Poetry Shines a Light on the Coal Industry. Justin Hopper is a writer, and he joins me by phone from Pittsburgh. Hi, Justin.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Justin, in your piece, you ID Mark Nowak as a Minnesota-based poet and labor activist. Tell us a little bit about him and the kind of poetry that he writes.
Yeah, Mark is from Buffalo, New York, and as you might imagine, he comes from a labor background. His family worked in the steel mills up around Lackawanna.
Most of which have since closed, right?
Most of which have since closed, mm-hmm. and that became a sort of really important touchstone for him. And in fact, the cover of his previous book, Shut Up, Shut Down, was actually a picture taken from the last days of that steel mill that his grandfather had worked in.
Now, Shut Up, Shut Down, that was a book that he actually went and read in union halls to workers themselves, right?
Yeah, it was very important to him, I think, at that point. He was just sort of realizing how enclosed the poetry world was. Yeah. And while he was certainly interested in poetry and still is and is remarkably knowledgeable about contemporary poetry, that bubble is not something that he feels a part of. So I think he specifically looked to take Shut Up, Shut Down and read it in union halls and read it at gatherings of activists and at protests, in fact,
mm-hmm.
and really try and utilize that poetry in a way other than simply touting himself as a poet, but really try and find something within that poetry that's a bit more universal and that can create that sort of we rather than that I.
So his latest attempt to get out of that kind of poetic bubble is Coal Mountain Elementary, based on the Sago mine disaster.
Yeah, I think that it was very important to him to capture the voices of the people who were actually participants in this event, and a very historic event, mind you, for West Virginia. I mean, this is something that one of the actresses in the play said was comparable in her lifetime only to September 11th.
We went over the hill. And two left. And we had to go change man trips, so we were behind them. I got to my head, forehead about probably 6:15, something like that. When I got there, I fueled my duster up, got it going, ate a cake, drank milk, just walked out of my belt line, and that's when it happened.
So I looked up at the clock, you know, and the clock's right there where you go out the door. And it was lightning, real hard, thunder. And I opened the door and just raining to beat the band, you know. And I shut the door and went that crack of thunder. My boss, Skipper, James Scott's his name, well, he looked at me at George and he said, "That felt like an explosion." That's exactly what he said.
I would think that people in West Virginia who were close to this tragedy might be a little suspicious of an outsider coming in and writing about it. How does he avoid seeming as if he's co-opting their tragedy? How does he write this thing so that it doesn't do that?
When I went to hear this performed in West Virginia and doing interviews afterwards, the overwhelming view is that he did as good a job as could ever possibly be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because what he's done is gone and taken the tens of thousands of pages of transcripts from the hearings that were held after the event.
I said, I'm going to stay in here and see what I can do, because I got a brother in here, because I know, you know what I mean? I'm knowing they're still trapped up there somehow, some ways. My boys begged me to go with them, and I said, nope, you all go. I got to stay and see if there's anything I can do.
To put it in a cliched way, there's not a dry eye in the house at the end of this, but it's not a cheap tear. At the end of this, you're tearing up because you're emotionally distraught and wrung out.
I heard the announcement. We have 12. We have 12 alive. And I looked amongst the others in the room because, well, I didn't see anybody jump. And then I seen somebody pump their fist, and I knew that they'd heard the same announcement that I did. You know, I made the comment to someone the other day that I touched the ceiling tiles when I jumped. I couldn't believe the announcement. I thought it was fantastic. And then I took off running. I went in the back door and out the side door towards the front of the mine office, just yelling, screaming.
I remember following this in the news and being simultaneously horrified at what was happening and that news had leaked out, but at the same time, really angry at news media because they really enjoy this sort of thing in a weird way, in kind of a sick way. This is an emotional scene which they can just milk for whatever it's worth for the 24-hour news cycle. How does Mark Nowak not do that?
What Nowak's doing that's not like that is he's avoiding picking only the emotional high points. There's a character in here who keeps talking about taking out his watch to look at his watch. And there's just something so immensely human about this moment. And what Mark's doing is looking at it from a very sort of localized point of view. I mean, this is the way he's written this comes through most perfectly in a West Virginia accent.
It is very localized, but at the same time, he internationalizes it by including news reports of terrible accidents that have been going on in China. Let's listen to one of those.
More than 150 Chinese coal miners were dead or missing yesterday following three separate accidents in 7 days, prompting renewed calls for better safety in the nation's notoriously dangerous industry.
You know, when you start thinking about that in terms of the rise of the Chinese economy and when we're buying things that are made in China, those legitimate factories are powered by coal that is extracted at the cost of, in some cases, hundreds and hundreds of lives at a time.
And he also, and I'm not sure if this is the most successful part of it based on what I've heard, but he also includes information from the American Coal Foundation's curriculum.
Have them measure this by placing it on the grid paper and tracing it. Have them count the number of squares that fall inside the circle. Partial squares count as full squares. Have them record this number on the cookie mining worksheet under D, reclamation.
The bits from the curriculum from the Coal Foundation, I actually would disagree. I think they are incredibly successful at what they do, because what that is doing is placing all of the rest of these aspects, the China aspects and the Sago aspects and these hyper-emotional moments and these very poetic moments into this prosaic sort of bracket.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about the mining industry from a sort of capitalist point of view in which we're talking about what are the costs of coal mining. And in the exercise laid out in this curriculum that he borrows from, the costs of coal mining are all about machinery and land reclamation. And it's just, it doesn't paint a pretty picture of the industry.
So let's listen to another scene where one of the rescuers comes upon the miners.
After we got about halfway down, I hear Jim yelling, "They're here! They're over here! Come over here, I found him." So I took off at a dead run, heading that way. And I went in there through a curtain there. It was just hanging there. I went on in, and there they all were. All. Jim's working on McCloy because he's alive, you know. So I go directly the opposite side, and I start checking for a pulse, checking for any breathing on the guys on the right-hand rib. So I'm working my way down, checking each one of the guys to make sure, you know, to see if they're alive, you know. And I get to the very last guy, and I hear Jim yell, "Come over here and help me. I need your help." So I go over there to help, and McCloy's still in a slouch position, and he's breathing real low. And he's making this noise when he breathes. And that's the noise we heard.
So you saw it in West Virginia, and you saw it also in Pittsburgh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Were you moved?
Very much. In fact, I don't want to say it's hard to watch, because it's not at all. It actually sort of flies by. But honestly, I can't express the difference between reading this and hearing it in a very soft, very subtle West Virginia accent. And I asked several of the actors and actresses about this. Is there something in this performance and in this language that maybe even Mark doesn't understand, that none of us who aren't born and raised and live in those communities understand? And while they were hesitant to say so, I think the eventual answer is yes. There's something that we are never going to quite be able to get. And in a way, I think that's almost more beautiful, that Mark will never even understand the full extent of this. And I think that's, first of all, fact, and second of all, very beautiful.
Justin Hopper, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Justin Hopper is a writer who lives in Pittsburgh. You can read his article on Mark Nowak on our website, poetryfoundation.org. If you're new to this program, you're in luck, because there are well over 100 previous programs that you can download. Check them out on the iTunes Store or on our website. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.